We'd spent hours driving on poor roads and in the heat through the province of Sindh. Our mission, to find a man called Ahmed Khan Chandio and his family. We had no way of contacting him. In September, we'd been in a boat here on a rescue mission with the army. Water had stretched to every horizon. We came across Ahmed, his wife Bargal, and their two sons, aged 9 and 7, stranded on a tiny bit of higher ground. They'd lost their home and belongings in the floods. All their livestock had drowned, though they had managed to save 2 chickens, which they'd been holding above the water for hours until the boat came. We filmed their plight, and the last we saw of Ahmed, Bargal and the boys was in a small relief camp, in a tiny tent with around 20 other people, trying to keep dry in another monsoon downpour. I wanted to know what happened next, how they managed to rebuild their lives. We remembered we picked them up close to where the top of a shrine had been visible over the waters. It was that fact that eventually led us to Ahmed. He looked haggard and thin, but he and one of his sons welcomed us. With other relatives, they'd returned to the place where their home once stood. There was nothing left. I asked about his wife, but Ahmed told me she'd gone to a town some 4 or 5 hours away for medical treatment. I'd wanted to see her too. She'd been so articulate the first time. But Ahmed talked of the family's troubles since the floods, and that since he had no animals left, he tried to make money by collecting wood and selling it in the nearest town, Pangrio. After recording a short interview, we said our goodbyes, but it wasn't to be the last time we saw Ahmed. Some distance away, we asked a man for directions. He asked where we'd been. When we told him, he shook his head and tuttered. "Isn't it terrible that she died?" he said. We assumed he'd got his facts wrong or misunderstood which family we'd visited. It was getting dark and we had a long drive, so we had to go, but asked a local journalist to look into it. It was late at night when we got a call to say other villagers were also saying Bargal had passed away. But why had Ahmed lied? What had he and his relatives got to hide? We had to go back. I didn't want to be confrontational and decided to take Ahmed aside alone and to play him the TV report in which he and Bargal had featured last year, to watch his reaction. Of course, the moment his wife appeared, he broke down, his whole frail body shaking as he sobbed. He watched it 7 or 8 times in a row. Each time his wife appeared, he drew himself close to the screen, and fresh tears tumbled down his face. I asked him again what had happened. This time he told me. They spent 3 months in the camp. They'd not had much to eat, and that his wife became weak and then ill. When the camp closed, the family returned to their land, though by then Bargal could hardly move. He described how they sold their only assets, those 2 chickens, to buy medicine, but it soon ran out, and how he sat by Bargal for a month caring for her until she did eventually die. And the reason he'd lied to us the day before? He was worried that if we'd been bringing aid, we might not have handed over whatever small quantity of food may have been allotted to Bargal. He broke down again as he told me, and then kept on apologising for lying. I put a hand on his back to comfort him, and felt the bones of his spine jutting out under his tattered tunic. In the reporting of this story, we were confronted with something else that wasn't true. The claim that Pakistan is prepared ahead of this year's monsoon season. 9 months since we first met Ahmed, there are places where floodwaters are still standing, where drainage canals are blocked, and where flood prevention measures were supposed to be implemented but haven't been, and the rains are just weeks away. Some of this country's voiceless poor may once again be plunged into such wretched desperation they feel they have to lie for the sake of a few cups of rice. But does anyone care?